Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Thank you for tuning in. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and it is Friday. So let's get right to it with Dennis Hart and his roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and Associated Papers. Take it away, Dennis.
As we always do, we begin with a look at what made news in Tuesday's Ames Tribune. The big story on that day was that a development group had dropped plans to build a city parking ramp in its proposal to build a massive multi-use development on Lincoln Way downtown. New renderings from the Chicago developer are smaller in scale than what was proposed to the city council last year. Previously, the plans included a four-story parking space with nearly 500 stalls to be split between public meters and parking for residents. The newest renderings no longer include a parking ramp or a skywalk over the railroad. Instead, the plan suggests reconstructing the westbound lane of Lincoln Way in the area for parallel parking, similar to parking in Campustown. The latest proposal would have 17,000 square feet of retail space on the ground floor of the buildings, with office space on the second floor and a 106-room hotel on a building on the western side of the development. A commercial plaza would separate the hotel and office from a housing complex. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, the Ames School Board unanimously voted to enter into a one-year agreement with Durham School Services to continue providing the district's transportation for the 2018-2019 school year during its meeting Monday night. Last December, the board had discussed the possibility of moving district transportation services in-house. The district had also approved conducting a study of transportation delivery in Ames to better understand the situation. That study is now going on. At that same meeting Monday night, the board heard that the district consulting firm is in the process of vetting candidates to replace retiring district superintendent Tim Taylor. Once that process is complete, the school board will meet in closed session to evaluate about 16 top applicants. Finalists will be brought in for interviews April 17th and 18th, and there will be an opportunity for the public to meet the finalists. The school board also set a hearing date for the district's 2018-2019 budget. The total proposed expenditure for that budget is $83 million, and the proposed tax rate is $14.34. The public hearing has been set for April 9th at 6:30 p.m. Also Tuesday, the Tribune reported that after a nationwide search for Iowa State University's next vice president of extension and outreach, a candidate already on campus was selected to fill the position. He is John Lawrence, who has filled the position on an interim basis since May of last year. He was chosen from a field that included three other candidates. Lawrence said, in his words, "I am honored to serve my colleagues, the university, and the entire state of Iowa." Lawrence previously served as associate dean in Iowa State's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences and director of extension and outreach. He joined the university in 1991. Tuesday's Tribune also reported that an Ames man who police said had sexually abused a minor was sentenced to 10 years in prison on Monday. 22-year-old Chris Samart Kiochai had pleaded guilty to lascivious acts with a child. Police said the victim, who was under the age of 12, told authorities that Kiochai had forced her to touch him inappropriately. The relationship between Kiochai and the victim is not known. Meanwhile, an Ames man was arrested over the weekend after court documents allege he made an anthrax threat against a Nevada teacher, mailing an envelope filled with a white powder. 66-year-old Mondell B. Olson is charged with first-degree harassment. Court documents allege that Olson sent a letter to the Nevada Central Elementary School on March 21st addressed to the victim. He allegedly crushed his prescription medication and put it into the envelope with a note saying anthrax, spelled A-N-T-H-R-A-S. The victim feared the powder was anthrax and alerted police. Olson had previously been arrested and charged with harassing a transgender student at Nevada High last year. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail and fined $625. His preliminary hearing on these latest charges is set for next Tuesday. There was more in Tuesday's Tribune, including word that the Ames Public Works Department was scheduled to begin its annual fire hydrant flushing program on Wednesday. Flushing the hydrants gets rid of mineral deposits and sediments, helps identify weaknesses in the water system, and makes sure the hydrants and valves are operating properly. There was also word that the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County announced the winners of its annual Making Democracy Work program. The winners are Wayne and Edna Clinton. Wayne Clinton taught and coached basketball at Ames High for decades and served on the Story County Board of Supervisors. Edna has served as president of the local NAACP chapter. The League of Women Voters also named Mary Sand as winner of the Carrie Chapman Catt Award. Mary has been active on the League of Women Voters board. One more note from Tuesday's Trib, details about the upcoming Kids Run for Kids event put on by the Ames Morning Rotary Club. That event will take place on Saturday, April 28th from 7:30 to 11 a.m. at Brookside Park in Ames. The purpose is to encourage children to become runners and to provide a fun-filled morning of family activities. In Wednesday's Tribune, word that police were investigating a string of nearly 90 incidents of vandalism to vehicles and businesses that took place across Ames over the past week. As of Tuesday, more than 70 cars and about 8 businesses have had their windows shot out from what authorities believe to be a BB gun. In addition, several Cyride stops have been vandalized. The damage estimate was anywhere from $150 to $200 for vehicle windows and about $1,000 for the businesses. Police Commander Jeff Huff said he believes most of those incidents took place overnight or in the late afternoon. He said he has seen incidents like this before, but never anything to this extent. Police were asking anyone who might have seen anything or anyone who had any information to come forward. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, a report on Tuesday night's Ames City Council meeting where, in a rare move, the council suspended its rules and approved all 3 necessary readings of an ordinance that places a moratorium on new development in the commercial area on and around Lincoln Way. The move was taken to give the council more time to decide how it wants to proceed with new zoning standards for the area. The action will prevent someone from potentially securing a building permit that could have been obtained under the usual procedure, where the council normally has 3 readings of an ordinance during 3 separate meetings. With such a building permit, a would-be developer could construct a business that future zoning standards would not allow. The new moratorium, which is scheduled to expire July 2nd, will apply to Lincoln Way between Duff and Grand Avenue south of downtown. The railroad tracks will serve as its northern border, while an alley one block south of Lincoln Way is the southern border. Meanwhile, at Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting, the supervisors heard that the Assault Care Center Extending Shelter and Support Program, or ACCESS, has a new executive director. She is Tess Cody, who previously served as a prevention manager at Drake University. Also in Wednesday's Trib, a report on a public forum held Tuesday night by Ames School District leaders to answer any last-minute questions from community members and provide information about next week's bond referendum that will decide whether the district will build a new high school. About 15 people attended the forum at the school district's office. Next Tuesday, voters will decide whether the district should issue $110 million in general obligation bonds to build a new high school and expand 3 elementary schools. That measure needs 60% voter approval to pass. One of Tuesday night's topics was why expanding those 3 elementary schools, Edwards, Meeker, and Mitchell, ended up being included in the referendum so soon after a 2012 bond referendum for $55 million resulted in the rebuilding and renovation of all 5 elementary schools in Ames. Superintendent Tim Taylor said that since that time, the district has added more than 200 elementary students, a growth rate he called unprecedented during his 26 years with the district. The Tribune also reported that a representative from the Department of Homeland Security met with Ames school administrators and toured 2 school buildings last week, all in an effort to increase safety and security within the district. District Superintendent Taylor said the visit generated good ideas that can be considered and put into action. One of the things the district was already considering was to have Ames students take part in safety drills by next fall at the earliest. Until now, only district staff members have taken part in preparations for dangerous situations. Meanwhile, Meeker Elementary School made a change related to security on Monday. The school ended the practice of unlocking the building's doors at 3:20 p.m. to let parents and guardians gather in the cafeteria. The doors will now remain locked, and parents and guardians will be able to meet their students outside. A district spokesman said Meeker was just trying to align itself with what other schools are doing. And one more note involving the Ames School District. Associate Superintendent Mandy Ross will be leaving the district in a few months to accept a superintendent position in Webster City. Ross has worked in the Ames District for the past 16 years. She will take over the Webster City District as it tries to secure approval from state regulators to merge with the nearby Northeast Hamilton Community School District. Her departure from Ames comes at a time when Ames Superintendent Taylor is planning to retire. Whoever is selected to be the next Ames leader will handle the decision about Ross's successor. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, several Iowa State University students gathered Tuesday night to weave a physical chain of their identities in the so-called Tree of Oppression Project. The idea came from members of the student government's Diversity and Inclusion Committee, who wanted to highlight the experiences of marginalized students on campus. Members of the committee intend to wrap the chains around a tree between the Parks Library and the Durham Center in the middle of the ISU campus. The chains are scheduled to stay up for the rest of the current academic year and through the next one. Wednesday's Tribune also reported on the Ballard School Board meeting last week, where the board unanimously approved the budget for the next fiscal year with a property tax rate of $19.57, which is up 4 cents from last year's rate. The board also approved an out-of-state travel request by Ballard High band director Derek Hawks and music director Peter Crum, so that the high school's music and band students can take a trip to Disney World in Orlando next spring. The projected cost per student is $1,000. In Thursday's Tribune, word that the Ames City Council has approved the first reading of an ordinance that makes additional changes to the city's rental occupancy code, including removing the number of parking spaces as a factor in determining occupancy. The code, as it now stands, requires single-family homes and duplexes to have a certain number of off-street parking spots in order to allow all bedrooms in the homes to be occupied. That change was approved in January, but after seeing information last week that showed the parking regulation having little impact, the council moved to remove it from the code. The council approved the first reading of several other changes to the code as well. Among them, freezing the maximum occupancy of rental homes in near-campus neighborhoods as of their January 1st number, defining an adult in terms of rental occupancy, excluding those 18 and older who are still dependents to someone they live with, and stipulating that homes with more than roomers living there are subject to the code. The council has also extended the moratorium on the issuance of rental permits for certain neighborhoods near the Iowa State campus. Those neighborhoods are where the council could decide to implement a concentration cap on the number of rentals allowed. Also Thursday in the Trib, a story that Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill on Wednesday that cuts nearly $11 million from the budgets of Iowa State University and the University of Iowa. No announcements have been made yet as to how the cuts will impact the two universities. Those cuts will be discussed in detail during the State Board of Regents' April 11th and 12th meeting in Council Bluffs, along with the topic of university tuition rates for the 2018-2019 academic year. The budget cuts were made as part of reductions needed to keep the state's fiscal year 2018 spending plan balanced. Also Thursday, the Tribune reported that an Ames woman was arrested for allegedly reaching for a police officer's gun after she climbed on vehicles and filled a trash can full of gasoline outside the West Ames Hy-Vee gas station. 18-year-old Daria Jean Bentley was arrested after police responded to reports of a woman wearing no pants who was yelling in the parking lot of the gas station at 4018 Lincoln Way. Officers found the suspect, who was trying to fill a garbage can with gasoline. They were told that the woman had been crawling on vehicles, chasing Hy-Vee employees with a pen and a wet floor sign, and throwing items on the floor. Bentley allegedly told police she was having a bad trip on acid and that she had imbibed whiskey, beer, and vodka. When she was taken to Mary Greeley Hospital, she allegedly tried to pull an officer's gun from his holster. One more note from Thursday's Tribune, Sweet Minnie's Donut Company opened a store in Ames on Wednesday. The frozen yogurt shop moved into the Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt Store on Lincoln Way near Grand Avenue. This is the second Sweet Minnie's in the nation, behind the original in Oklahoma City, and it is thought to be a testing ground for the company as it considers expansion offers in the Midwest and Florida. In this week's Nevada Journal, word that Nevada City Council members will soon consider reducing the amount of time fireworks will be allowed to be sold and shot off this summer. After thinking about and hearing the results of a survey the city conducted, council members agreed that 4 days of fireworks sales and use would be enough this summer. The hours for fireworks to be used would be 6 to 10 p.m. July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and from noon to 11 p.m. on July 4th. The council plans to have the first of three readings of the new fireworks ordinance on April 9th. At Monday's council meeting, the council approved a nearly $84,000 contract for Harrison Concrete to do work on the Nevada Trail system this summer. Fire Chief Ray Reynolds received approval to spend about $63,000 to repair the concrete in front of the fire station. And City Administrator Matt Martison said that DuPont is in the process of completely shutting down its plant by the end of April. He said there are indications that several people are interested in buying the facility. Also in this week's journal, word that Nevada will undergo a major central business district infrastructure improvement project, possibly as soon as in the year 2020. It will cost about $9 million and include reconstructing and replacing the city's aging water and sewer lines, new downtown lighting and fireworks, and more. Also in the journal, a report on last week's community forum about drugs and opioids. About 30 people attended to find out what could be done to combat drug abuse. In this week's Boone News Republican, a report on the project to upgrade amenities and infrastructure at the Ledges State Park campground. Work is now underway to upgrade the campsite electrical system, to extend water and sewer systems, to establish 15 full hookup sites, and to widen the main roadway coming into the campground. No completion date has been set. Also in the News Republican, a story about Freedom Flight veterans who went to the Ogden Middle School to tell students about their experiences in the service. There was also word that Jefferson Scranton High School graduate Phil Thompson announced his candidacy for a state House of Representatives seat. In this week's Story City Herald, word that a rural Story City teenager has been selected to be a member of Iowa's Ambassadors of Music in Europe this summer. Aaron Dieber, a sophomore at South Hamilton High School, was nominated to take part in a performance tour in July as part of an all-Iowa group of musicians comprising chorus and band. The trip will take Aaron and his mom to London, Paris, Switzerland, Austria, Italy, and Germany. Also in the Herald, word that Story City's annual Easter egg hunt will take place tomorrow, Saturday at 10 a.m. in the South Park. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm KHOI Civic Reporter Dennis Hart. wishing all of you a happy, safe, and healthy Easter weekend.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for your local news roundup. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your Local Talk air traffic controller for today, and this is the Popcorn Song. Not sure why we are playing the popcorn song at this point, other than it's just an awesome song and seems about up to speed with Dennis. We're always amazed at how he gets all of that news into 15 minutes. Cal Halliburton is here with his next installment of Candidates with Cal. Today is the second interview for the position of Iowa Secretary of State. Cal?
It's our pleasure today to be talking with Mr. Jim Maurer. Mr. Maurer is running in the primary election to be held June 5th for the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the Iowa Office of Secretary of State. I should note that in Iowa, the Secretary of State is the top elections administrator and also oversees all business registrations. Jim grew up on a farm near Boone and is a graduate of Boone High School. Following the 9/11 terrorist attacks in 2001, he joined the Iowa National Guard and served two stints in Iraq. Maurer finished college in between missions, earning a bachelor's degree in political science and government from the American Military University and a master's degree in public policy from George Mason University. In 2010, he joined the Pentagon, serving as special assistant to the Undersecretary of the Army. While there, he created the Army's Office of Business Transformation, tasked with increasing efficiency and saving tax dollars. He's been a candidate for Congress in both the 3rd and 4th congressional districts and a vice chair of the Iowa Democratic Party. Jim and his wife Chelsea live in Des Moines with their two sons. He works for a human services nonprofit organization and is adjunct faculty at Grandview University. Jim, tell our listeners something about yourself that they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
Well, Cal, glad to be with you today, and appreciate that question. One of my proudest moments in recent history was I was lucky enough to participate in the Celebrity Swine Show at the Madison County Fair. I'm a pretty minor celebrity, obviously, but was still thrilled. And I did win the Madison County Celebrity Swine Show by a large margin, I must note, over, I think, 15 or so other individuals. So I have a very nice plaque that I was awarded. I've got it on my wall as the grand champion of the Madison County Celebrity Swine Show. So I did actually raise pigs. As you noted, I grew up on a family farm, and I did raise pigs previously, so I guess I haven't lost my touch.
Jim, I assume you've been traveling all over the state, and as you talk with people across the state, what are their most frequent concerns that are affected by the Secretary of State's office?
Well, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times people don't know a lot about the Secretary of State role. They don't know what responsibilities are there. They don't necessarily know the issues. But when I talk to them about the business licensing and registration, I talk to them about the voting issues. You know, I talk to small business owners. They're concerned with the business side of things. Other states have instant online registration for businesses. Iowa has a pretty antiquated old process that takes time and is relatively expensive compared to other states. And so that needs to be updated. And as you said, that's exactly what I did at the Pentagon when I oversaw the Army Office of Business Transformation, was modernize those business processes. So that's exactly what I'll do as Secretary of State. And what I hear the most about, as you might imagine, is the voting side. And there was a lot of concern in 2016 about what happened with foreign interference in our elections. And so those issues really are at the top of people's minds. And very clearly, those issues have not been addressed. Unfortunately, the current Secretary of State has a very poor record. It was discovered in February of 2017 that he failed to count about 6,000 absentee ballots. Since that time, he shortened early voting. He's making it harder and more expensive for people to vote in various ways. And all of this while he was denying potential foreign intrusion into our election system, which the Department of Homeland Security later came out this past fall and said that there was attempted intrusion into Iowa's election systems. So I think we need a Secretary of State who's going to focus on securing our elections against any potential domestic or foreign intrusion. We need to invest in those voting systems, and we need to ensure that every single citizen of Iowa has an equal opportunity to cast their ballot and ensure that that vote is counted.
I've been asking all the candidates that I've interviewed, what are the specific actions that you can take in order to ensure those things take place?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad that you've been asking candidates that, because sometimes, you talk about the potential for things to happen, but you can't do them single-handedly. I would quote LBJ, who probably did more than any other modern president on the voting rights front. He said, the Attorney General can write legislation, file lawsuits, the Congress can write bills and pass them, but only the president can use his office as a great moral instrument. And I think it's really, really important that we have a Secretary of State in Iowa who is willing to use that office as a great moral instrument to defend our democracy. And right now, we do have enemies of democracy, people who are attacking our democracy, both foreign and some domestic. And so it's really, really important to do that. And I think as Secretary of State, I will use that position as a great moral instrument to do these things. I think that when you look at the changes that can take place single-handedly, through interpretation of the law and how you implement these changes. There's also several boards and commissions that the Secretary of State sits on, and changing the person who's in that position is going to potentially change the way that several decisions are made. And then also having a Secretary of State who's going to be a real advocate to try to get state and federal resources allocated to invest in these systems. Our democracy has been underinvested in. When you look at, what happened in Florida in 2000, when you look at the potential for intrusion into our voting systems, we've invested very, very little money into a foundational piece of our democracy, which is voting. And so I think that there do need to be some investments in that. And we need a Secretary of State who can be the chief advocate, be the chief election officer, go to legislators at the state and federal level and say, hey, if you believe in our democracy, we need you to invest in it.
A number of people are wondering, there's a change in our current voting system, and I don't know whether I'm going to be able to vote or not. What is the situation there? If I go to the polls and, they ask me for ID and I don't have it, or if I have it, it might be out of date. Am I just stuck and unable to vote?
Well, it is really, really important that people are prepared, that they educate themselves. I did an hour-long presentation recently where we brought people in and I talked about all of the different changes that are happening. So I would encourage people to look into these changes early, contact their county auditor. We have the 99 county auditors who are the people who actually administer elections at the local level. So they're your best resource to contact to make sure you're on the voting rolls. Ask them, what you need. So part of, again, all these barriers barriers that have been created, there is a lot of uncertainty. And we saw this in Polk County recently when they had the local option sales tax election. People were turned away. They didn't understand the changes that were taking place. Now, in 2018 only, you will be allowed, but some of the election officials at the local level may not even themselves be that aware of some of these changes. I heard one anecdote from someone who went to vote in Polk County. They were asked for an ID. They didn't have their ID, and they told them, well, they couldn't vote. And someone called me, and I said, no, ask them for the slip. You can sign a slip that attests that you are a registered voter, you're this person. And that's a 2018-only rule. So that's not going to work after 2018, but that will work in 2018. So it's really important to look at all the different aspects of this. If you do not have an Iowa driver's license or non-operator license, there are a couple other photo IDs that are acceptable, military ID, passport, things like that. When Mr. Pate proposed this legislation, he said there would be about 85,000 Iowans who would need additional identification that don't have one of those. Well, when the dust settled, it was actually 123,000 Iowans who did not have the appropriate identification under this new law. And there were over 300,000 more eligible voters who did not have the appropriate ID. So those voters, those 123,000 voters, should have been mailed a card, a paper card in December. I know there's a lot of holiday mail, so it might have slipped through. If you know you don't have the appropriate ID right now, contact your county auditor to get one of those cards issued to you.
If I have a driver's license that's valid, I have the proper ID?
You have the proper photo ID, but your address also needs to be correct on that driver's license. You also need to make sure that your name is the same as your voter registration if you've been, you know, married or divorced or changed your name for other reasons. Or if your address has changed, then that will identify you as the voter, but it will not verify your address. And so that address verification is another part of it. In addition, there's a signature verification piece that could cause trouble as well. So my warning to folks is, you know, I want people to be prepared for this. There are pieces of this that I would look to change, obviously, in the future. But for 2018, my best advice is for people to look at these changes, contact their county auditor, and try to make it as easy as possible for themselves to vote. Talk to their friends and families and neighbors about these changes, because I think there's the real potential, and I've talked to several county auditors, both Democrats and Republicans, who are very concerned that on Election Day there are going to be a lot of voters who have not prepared in any way for this, which is not the voters' fault, but that there could be big lines on Election Day. You know, in Indiana, they passed similar changes to this, and they spent $4 million on an education campaign telling the voters about the changes that were happening. Well, in Iowa, there were $0 appropriated to do that. So it's really, really important that we talk about these changes, that we make sure that you are prepared, and that's the best advice that I can give at this point.
Assuming you're elected, would you change those things?
I absolutely think that when you look at this legislation, there are artificial barriers put into place that make it harder and more expensive, especially for some groups of voters to participate in our democracy. When you look at the impact on college students, on seniors, on minority voters, low-income voters who move around a lot, things like that, those are the groups of voters that are the most disproportionately affected by this change. And this change does not add any security to our elections. So we need to refocus on securing our elections from foreign or domestic bad actors and intrusion into our systems. But there, all of these other artificial barriers definitely need to be changed.
Is there, at this point, anything else you'd like to tell our audience?
Well, I even have my own very small business that I've dealt with this process. Mm-hmm. As you said, I work for a human services nonprofit. I'm an adjunct professor at Grandview University in Des Moines. I have my own small consulting business. So I understand the different. I've voted from overseas. I've voted from a war zone when I was serving in Iraq in 2006 with the Iowa National Guard. I was in the middle of the desert, essentially the middle of nowhere. I took it upon myself to organize the soldiers in my unit and get their absentee ballots done. And a lot of those absentee ballot requests never showed up in the United States. A lot of those absentee ballots never showed up in Iraq. Some of them showed up after Election Day. And so ensuring that Iowans living and serving overseas and ensuring that their votes are counted would absolutely be a top priority of mine, because the people who defend our freedom should be able to participate in it. I was helping a buddy of mine vote from Iraq in 2006, and he knew me pretty well, and I knew him pretty well. And he said, Jim, I don't think I'm going to vote the way you want me to vote in this election. I said, look, we can talk about that another time. But I think it's really, really important that everybody has an equal chance to participate in our democracy and ensure that their voice is heard. And that's why I'm running for Secretary of State.
Thank you very much, Jim. How would people get in touch with your campaign?
Absolutely. Well, they can go to my website. It's jimforiowa.com. My last name, Maurer, is just too tough to spell. So jimforiowa.com. From there, they can also go to our Facebook page, Twitter, and contact us through any of those mediums. And we'd love to have people check that out and sign up for updates on the campaign.
Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Jim Maurer is running in the primary election to be held June 5th for the Democratic Party nomination for the office of Secretary of State. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in today.
If you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your Local Talk host for this hour. Thank you, Cal Halliburton, for the interview with the candidates for Secretary of State. And Cal will be moving on soon to more candidates in the primary, including the gubernatorial candidates. Coming up soon. Ames Progressive Alliance has joined us for their monthly presentation on Local Talk. Today they will bring you more information about the proposed wellness center being spoken about so much here in Ames.
This is Ann Kinzel and Carolyn Myers for Ames Progressive Alliance. Today, we're going to talk about the proposed Healthy Life Center in Ames. So recently, there was an article in the Ames Tribune by Austin Cannon that told us that the City of Ames wants to partner with the hospital, Mary Greeley, Iowa State, Heartland Senior Services, DMAC, and Story County to build and operate what they call an intergenerational facility that will include aquatic facilities, a gymnasium, fitness equipment, and other wellness-promoting amenities. That's a mouthful, so today we're going to learn more about the vision behind the Healthy Life Center and its estimated $48.7 million price tag. Helping us to understand what's going on is Nancy Carroll, Executive Director of Heartland Senior Services and a Healthy Life Center Steering Committee member. Hey, Nancy, nice to have you today.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get any further, can you tell us a little bit about what your role has been in developing this project?
Sure. For about 2 years, the entities that you had mentioned have been meeting since February of 2016. And it's been this conversation that if all six of us came together, what could we do that would really be special and really go after the entire person's health and well-being, that if we tried to do it individually, we could never accomplish it. So for 2 years, that's been our journey, and it's been a good one. We've made a lot of inroads.
The articles that I've seen in the Tribune focus a lot on the building and its costs, which are sizable. Mm-hmm. And when something has this big, I assume the partners have a real vision for what they want to accomplish. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yep, that's spot on. And, you know, it's really interesting. When we go after projects that are large capital improvements for a community, it's very easy to kick very quickly into the brick and the mortar and the price tag. And for these 2 years when we've been meeting, really what we have focused upon every month when we meet monthly for about 2 hours a time is that we started with a purpose. And every time we've held ourselves accountable to that. So I want to start with just what the purpose is, because everything has grown out from that. So it's to provide a one-of-a-kind center that makes the lifelong goal of healthy living accessible and enjoyable to people of all ages and socioeconomic status. So that's been the driving force. From that, it's just evolved that we've had different areas that we said, you know what, we want to go for the whole person's health and well-being. If you think sometimes about trying to improve people's quality of life, it may be the physical that becomes more apparent quickly, which is fitness equipment and a track and a gym. But we said, you know what, that's not enough. So we want to do the whole person. So we also have wrapped in this idea of health and wellness and eating right and changing nutritional behavior, and also social connections, which we think is really important too.
So it seems like we're talking about a lot more than a building.
Correct. It's what's going to happen on the inside that's going to make it special.
Okay. Before we get to, I know Carolyn has some questions, but I want to ask one quick last one here. Where's this building proposed to be located?
When we started to look after about 18 months of the conversation, we knew with the programmatic elements that we wanted to bring to life, and with these six entities all needing to have their kind of space, four of us in particular, it started to be obvious that we were looking at about a 10-acre parcel. And as we all know, living in Ames, there aren't a lot of available 10-acre parcels that might be convenient for the majority of people, as well as on a SciRide bus route. So thank goodness one of our participating entities is Iowa State University. And so thankfully, we have a verbal agreement between the City of Ames and Iowa State University that it could be located out on Ontario and Shoal Road. And if you're familiar with that in your mind's eye, it's a 10-acre parcel on the west side of Shoal Road that we're looking at. And then on the east side, there still would be a 5-acre parcel remaining as kind of a test plot for ongoing research for Iowa State.
Is that the space that old hands and names refer to as the old nuclear site?
It would be behind it, the Applied Science Center. And a really important thing that I would encourage anyone that's listening to do is to please go on the City of Ames website. And on their homepage, there is now a page set up for the Healthy Life Center, and there are two things they can view. One is a PowerPoint presentation from a consultant that came to Ames on February 5th that lays out the whole project with pictures and data and information, but also a video that only lasts for 3 minutes, and it's Kathy Sveck, who is a local Ames girl who now is recently retired from Iowa State University, interviewing Harris Seidel. What they're doing is making sure everyone understands that the two are not connected, of the nuclear Manhattan Project days to now, which was back in behind, to this frontage that we're talking about that was never federal land. It's always been ag land and clean.
So can you tell me more about how this location was chosen and were any other locations in town considered?
Yes. When we started knowing this 10 acres, you got to start to say reasonably, where can we get 10 acres?
Sure.
And centrally located. You know, you can always, of course, go to the outskirts of a community and try to obtain land. But number one, it's not convenient. And when we talk about the purpose statement of wanting to impact all ages, all socioeconomic status, you want something that's more centrally located. Would we have loved to have tried the Lincoln Way Corridor or maybe where Heartland currently sits on about a 1.5-acre site? You bet. But realistically, we would have had to look at a lot of other players and a lot of other probably significant money to try to acquire those, and it would have gotten to be probably controversial. So with that being said, this presented itself, and it seemed like the most viable location.
Okay. Can you tell me, has there been anything like this built in any other areas of Iowa that you know of?
Not in Iowa. And we would even suggest maybe not really in the nation. And the only reason I say that is because we have six partners. You can find other facilities that maybe have a hospital in a city, a hospital in a university, you know, those kind of relationships. But when you look at a city, a hospital, a Division I level university, also then a community college, the county, and then a senior services that serves those 16 and above, no, we can't find anyone that models that.
Okay. And how will all of this work together with the various partners like Mary Greeley, Iowa State, Heartland, Story County, the City of Ames? Because I know like City of Ames has lots of athletic facilities currently at City Hall. So how will all of that work together?
Great question. Well, that's the beauty of the whole facility, because when we say we want to improve people's health and well-being, it isn't just – Mary Greeley has just their physical therapy, let's say, space now at the hospital. But in the Healthy Life Center, when they bring therapy to that facility, the participant or the patient, when they're doing, let's just say, hip rehab. Then they're going to start to see after that that, whoa, I can also go and walk in a current channel. I can go and walk the track. I can use the same equipment that I was trained on in the physical therapy rehab session. Now it's available to me within the whole building. Mm-hmm. Many times, too, you got to start to connect all the ideas when we talk about eating better and the health and nutrition. There's going to be a demonstration participation kitchen with about six islands. And we'll utilize the students from Iowa State and the culinary arts students at DMAC to come in and teach a lot of those classes. That's a huge piece is why Iowa State and DMAC are involved. Because lots of times if maybe you've had a hip replacement, let's say, you may also want to not only increase your activity level, but also maybe think about how could I eat healthier.
Well, we're going to take a station break here. You're tuned to KHOI Community Radio 89.1. This is Ames Progressive Alliance on Local Talk. Our guest is Nancy Carroll, Executive Director, Heartland Senior Services, and Healthy Life Center Steering Committee member. So, Nancy, the project has been identified as intergenerational. Can you tell me a little bit what that means in terms of programs and activities?
Well, I think initially when we talk intergenerational, I think people sometimes think, oh, because Heartland Senior Services is going to be located in the complex and Ames Parks and Recreation, that it will be those two being combined of what Parks and Recreation might bring into the facility. But really, we're seeing it of Ames residents, let's just say that are recently retired baby boomers, and they want to give back. And there's children in the community, let's just say maybe from the Boys and Girls Club, that don't have an active parent or grandparent within the Ames community. And so if we can blend those two, and let's just use the outdoor community gardens that would be located at the Healthy Life Center, the retiree could be working with the children in planting, weeding, hoeing, all the stuff that takes place, right? And then yet harvesting that. But here's the thing. That's the activity. What in my mind is the hidden gem here is that older adult is able to influence that little child's life. That little child is able to influence in a positive way that older adult. And that's where I think the magic of intergenerational, each of us can influence each other's lives from where we're at. We hope that technology will be an important part of the Healthy Life Center. So as an example, when we talk about there will be a music, crafts, arts space, we really hope that, again, younger retirees or whatever age of people that know how to play an instrument, they could come in and teach a younger children that as a volunteer. And so, again, they might learn how to play an instrument, but we really hope that relationship piece is what really happens, because people are searching for connection and people are searching for relationship building. And that's a core central tenet of the Healthy Life Center.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have an example of a successful community project when money was raised to expand and improve the existing library.
Mm-hmm.
And the library director, Lynn Carey, has really done an amazing job of programming. And one could argue that right now the library is kind of a Healthy Life Center of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So are you thinking that this is kind of going to be a Healthy Life Center of the more physical kind of activities as well as intergenerational kind of activities? Is that a fair way to characterize it?
I think that's an interesting way to characterize it. And I think, again, Ann, that question is at the tip of what, again, we really need to think through. Because what Lynn Carey and the library staff and the library board of trustees has done at that library over the last several years is, I think, unprecedented. It is a community resource. And it wasn't, let's just say, 15 years ago, it was you go check out a book and read it and bring it back. Mm-hmm. And maybe you'd use a laptop or a computer when you were in there if you didn't have one at home. It has fundamentally changed the landscape of Ames, and I couldn't agree with you more. It is truly a community gathering place. And I think we need to go to Lynn and her staff and the Board of Trustees and say, how did you do this? How did you do this? What? How did you create this culture of openness, inclusiveness? And it's just, I think, a model. And so, yes, the Healthy Life Center, I think, again, we have to see ourselves engaging with the library, because people should go to the library and feel engaged in that and then come to the Healthy Life Center in a little bit different way. But we should be seamless in those services that we're all seeing as just resources within this whole community. But no one has done it better, I don't think, the last several years in the Ames Public Library, and they need to be a benchmark for us at the Healthy Life Center to creating the right culture.
Well, this is really exciting for me because I've been reading recently, and I've been involved in working in healthcare off and on my whole life, that loneliness is now perceived as a real sort of comorbidity or serious factor as a health issue, that people who are lonely have poor health outcomes mm-hmm. and poor life mm-hmm. expectations. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the kind of center that you're describing, that in conjunction with the library, we could really take on loneliness, if you will, in Ames across the generations head on.
Love it. Yep, exactly. And this whole social isolation thing, seniors are the most vulnerable, I think, if you do actual research, because they're 60 and above, and it just is more of an isolation, lonely state when they've maybe lost a spouse or significant other, whatever. However, I would also start to suggest that it's all ages, because anymore with, I think, technology, people are just becoming more homebound. And it can start with kids, and I would attribute that in some of our data. One of the reasons the Healthy Life Center is so important, and why Mary Greeley Medical Center is at the Healthy Life Center core, is because of childhood inactivity and obesity and chronic disease management, which is a reflection of people sitting at home isolated. So we need, though, through a public library or at a Healthy Life Center, give them reasons to come out and come and get engaged and make social connections. And that's why that's one of our central bubbles, or the third bubble of our diagram, because it's so important for everyone to have a healthier life. One of the things very quickly is doctors see people, especially older adults that I'm familiar with, they'll come into the primary care physician and they'll say, I'm depressed, you know, and I'm not eating well. And they'll give them a prescription for medication versus talking through, well, do you have some friends? Do you have any community involvement? Are you in clubs or whatever? And we always go to that prescription first versus trying to do things that engage people and get them connected. And that's, again, I think what we're trying to go after. And it's just the tip of the iceberg. And there's going to have to be a lot of purposeful thinking and staying true to our mission to make sure that social networking really comes to life at the Healthy Life Center, like mm-hmm. it has at the Ames Public Library.
Oh, that's great. I'm hearing lots of positive things about this. One of the questions that will come up, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot, is according to the Ames Tribune, it says that it will cost about $48 million to build this facility. How will that be financed? What are the operating costs, and how are they going to be paid?
The capital will be kind of a three-prong approach. When we talk about the $48 million, that's the entire project cost, mm-hmm. okay? And then with that, Heartland will pay for its own specific capital footprint, which is about $3.5 million of that $48. Mary Greeley Medical Center will pay for its physical therapy dry space. Mary Greeley, however, beyond about that $2 million for their tenant space, is also going to be recommending to their board of trustees, who has yet to formally approve it, another $5 million to put towards the common shared space
okay.
and the therapy pool that will reside within the city's warm water recreational pool. So if you think about it, Mary Greeley right now has a therapy pool at the Dorn Clinic. It's a little dark and it's a little dreary, and they're the first ones to say this. So they're sitting there saying, why would we put a lot of money and invest in that? If we move our resources over to this new facility and we're in the same envelope, whoa, what a way more cost-effective way to go. So Mary Greeley would be coming in with their capital funding. Right now we're asking the Board of Supervisors to participate at a county level at about $3 million. Then residents outside of the Ames resident borders would pay the same user fees as the residents of Ames. In addition to those three players, the City of Ames also would contribute $2 million from a bequest that the city received many years ago. And the residents of Ames ultimately would have to pass a bond issue for about $15 million. And that would kind of pay for what the indoor warm water aquatic center would cost. And then the balance is $18 million. And we're going after private dollars to fill the gap. And I have to be very clear, it's unprecedented. If we can raise $18 million, we will say it's never been done before, and that the vision, though, really spoke to people. And that's what we're going to be testing. Ann Campbell, Warren Madden, and Bev Madden. They're leading the philanthropic campaign over the next 8 months to test the appetite for raising $18 million in this community. But early indications are there's interest, and we believe this is a doable and achievable amount to raise.
Any ideas about how this is going to take place? Are they looking for single big donors? Are they going to ask people to, you know, buy a brick?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. All okay. the above. Because I think it's really important. Obviously, the bricks are going to come secondary, but in the millions first, we hope, because, again, it's unprecedented. And people, I think, like to be involved in something that's a first that can change lives for decades. And that's what we're talking about here. And again, when we talked at the beginning of the conversation, we can't go anywhere else to find six entities that can be together in conversation for 2 years and keep moving an effort forward. Usually the wheels come off after about 2 or 3 meetings because people can't get along and they get into it, you know, and that is not the case. We all enjoy, respect, and trust one another as these six entities. And so that's why we're able to move it forward. And I think people can get excited about that and what the ramifications would be of changing lives in the whole person and for all socioeconomic status. We have naming opportunities that will be available at the corporate level as well as the individual. And those are where we're looking for the bigger investments initially. But I also think it's incumbent upon us that the fundraising also includes, let's just say, maybe a $500 gift that you would get like a plaque or something on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it would go up to maybe $5,000 in that realm for the size of your name or the brick. But we want everyone to be involved because that sets the right message from the get-go. Inclusiveness, total participation of everybody, you know, so we don't want anyone to be excluded. So I think that's important.
So when people would use this facility, then they would pay fees just like people currently do at Parks and Rec for programming. Is that right?
Correct.
And what about, we know that if anybody who's been to the city gym notes that we have a variety of socioeconomic groups that use the gym, including people of very limited means.
Uh-huh.
So how are those folks going to be able to use this nice brand spanking new facility?
Great. Though it seems new in this situation where we're talking about the Healthy Life Center, at Parks and Recreation in the city of Ames, we've always had a philosophy that anyone was always welcome. And if they couldn't afford the going registration fee, then there are sponsorships or scholarships. And there's also groups in Ames that are very giving. And so we work with them. I was director of Parks and Recreation from 1991 to 2013. And I can say from experience, we never turned anyone away. And we celebrated when people wanted to participate. And yet we do it very quietly because we don't want anyone to feel not like they don't fit in from the get-go. So
mm-hmm.
it's always done in a quiet way, but a classy way. And we never turn anybody away.
Now, I was unaware that the city offered that for people of lower economic status. Are you going to make it more obvious or advertise that people have this possibility with the Healthy Lifestyle Center?
You betcha.
Okay.
And if we need to do better, and I'll own that thing, we need to do better if people don't know it. But that will not change. And if you think about the services we're offering and proposing at the Healthy Life Center, it's our adult day center. And every day people come in wheelchairs to our adult day. It could be that Mary Greeley physical therapy. Well, people are going to be coming with a lot of mobility issues that, of course, we're going to have to really think through transportation, accessibility, all those things.
But you intend this to be a center where the elderly don't necessarily dominate the scheme. You're looking to have all kinds of ages and workouts and opportunities.
You betcha. I'll give you a comparison point. When carpool was open, we had about 25,000 people that would visit carpool in those 3 months. We opened the Furman Aquatic Center the very first summer, over 100,000 visits. And if you go down there, it is every walk of life from Ames. It's toddlers and grandparents and people with lack of mobility to very active people. Just take that mindset of who's on that pool deck and all the things they're experiencing in their own unique way, because we designed it to do that. That is a microcosm of what the Healthy Life Center will be. We cannot speak to enough emphasis on all ages, all ability levels, all socioeconomic status.
Well, I want to thank my broadcast buddy, Carolyn.
Yes.
And especially I want to thank Nancy Carroll for helping us understand the vision that's driving the proposed Healthy Life Center in Ames. There's clearly a lot to do for you over the next several months, years before the project becomes a reality. We hope that you'll join us again in the months ahead and give us an update.
And I want to thank you. I want to thank both of you for hosting this conversation today with me. And I really want people to know, too, they can contact any of us on the steering team. But just because I'm being visited with today, please feel free to call me, Nancy Carroll, anytime at Heartland Senior Services, because it still is in the conceptual stage. And if people are having questions in addition to what we talked about today, or they have ideas, it's still critical to get those to be expressed because we want to hear them.
Thank you so much. Be sure to keep up with APA activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page and our website at amesprogressivealliance.org. You can always reach us via email at amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com. You can get a copy of this radio show and follow up with the latest community developments on KHOI and also with our Facebook. Thanks again for KHOI for hosting the show. We love that KHOI does so much to move this community towards more of a progressive future.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Thanks for being with us during this past hour. Earlier in the show, we heard from Dennis Hart with local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, and Kel Halliburton spoke with Jim Maurer, candidate for the office of Secretary of State of Iowa. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Also, remember that you can hear Local Talk online at khoifm.org later today on our homepage, and there will be links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And it is my pleasure to have been your local talk host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Please donate to KHOI during our upcoming fund drive in the last weeks of April. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio